is no sign of your intelligence to confirm that all religions are going up the same mountain. You have to deny the fundamental teachings of the religions of the world to come to that conclusion.
Craig Parton, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Religion on Trial, Cross-Examining Religious Truth Claims.
They may all be wrong, but do any of them ask to be tested by the canons of evidence used in the law, science, and history?
Learn more about Religion on Trial at issuesetc.org.
For so long, we have been champions of human rights around the world. We have talked to other dictators who are engaged in ethnic cleansing, who are engaged in afflicting minorities, and said, stop, that's not the way you treat people, and it's not the way you treat refugees coming to your borders. There's a whole international protocol of respect and dignity for refugees getting a fair hearing, and yet here we are violating it.
That's Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley speaking with CBS News, describing what's happening on the U.S.-Mexico border as ethnic cleansing. Where did the term ethnic cleansing come from? And is it properly applied to what's happening in U.S. immigration policy? What should we know about U.S. immigration policy, past and present, to rightly understand how to describe what's going on there? I don't think anyone agrees that this is good. Well, some may think that it's good, but most people are coming around to the idea that what's happening is very bad, especially with respect to the detaining of children apart from their parents. But does it go as far as ethnic cleansing? Joining us to answer that question, Lyman Stone. He's an agricultural economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture and advisor to demographic intelligence. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Aggressive Deportations Are Bad, But They're Not Ethnic Cleansing. Lyman, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be here.
We've been watching this unfold for about 2 weeks now. Reactions are very strong on both sides of the political spectrum. Why are both sides reacting so strongly to what's happening on the U.S. southern borders?
Well, it's a hot button issue. And beyond that, it's an issue where Congress has delegated a lot of responsibility and authority to make policy to the president. So with President Obama, we saw deferred action, where a large number of immigrants were sort of given a de facto temporary legal status. That outraged many conservatives. And then now we see the opposite thing happening, where President Trump is using his discretion to very aggressively enforce a specific interpretation of the law. So the result is that policies can swing wildly back and forth between administrations. And so it draws a lot of attention and attracts a lot of outrage towards who's ever in the Oval Office.
What is the origin of the term ethnic cleansing?
So this term starts to enter English during the crisis in the Balkans after the collapse of Yugoslavia. So as the various ethnic groups there tried to remove one another from the areas where they wanted to be dominant, the term ethnic cleansing came about, and it's really sort of a horrible phrase. It kind of implies that having a different ethnicity near you is somehow dirty, which is kind of a strange and awful thing to say. But now it's entered English as sort of a term that we use to refer to attempts to purge minority groups from a given area, although it doesn't really have a strict definition.
Talk about what it's been applied to since it came into the Western lexicon.
Oh, sure. I mean, the phrase is used all the time. You see it referring to genocides like, the Holocaust. People refer to as an incident of ethnic cleansing. You can see it also used to refer to large-scale population deportations, like the expulsion of Germans from Eastern Europe after World War II. It'll even be used to refer to the population exchange between Turkey and Greece after World War I, where Greece sent all their Turks to Turkey and Turkey sent all their Greeks to Greece. It's used to refer to things that have happened in Africa with Rwanda or Darfur. It's become sort of a multi-purpose term for essentially, anytime someone wants to say that violence or removal is ethnically targeted, they'll sort of leap to this word. which is troublesome because it doesn't have a very clear definition, and because its provenance is not in sort of formal international law, but really the rhetoric of the genocidaires themselves.
So you kind of assemble a set of three criteria that might accurately describe what ethnic cleansing is. What are those criteria, and do they apply to recent policy changes? We're not talking about the change in the law, but a change in policy and implementation under the Trump administration of U.S. immigrant policy.
Right. So the issue we see is that a lot of progressives are coming out and saying, oh, this aggressive deportation is ethnic cleansing. So then the question is, what does that mean? And you can kind of, if you read all the literature on this, you can kind of come up with three general criteria that should describe ethnic cleansing. First of all, is it forcible? That is it violent or accompanied by the threat of violence? Two, is it targeted at a specific ethnic or religious group or groups? And three, does it in fact aim, or is it likely to have the effect of removing that group or group from a given territory? So it's got to be violent, ethnically targeted, and actually plausibly aimed at, quote, cleansing. That is, it has to actually have a plausible aim of removing a whole group or a large share of a group. So when we look at U.S. policy, we say, well, is it forcible? Well, I mean, all law enforcement is forcible to some extent, but we mean, is it unusually forcible? And the answer is, to some extent, yes. We've seen the presence of paramilitary units along the border with militias. This is a common theme in incidents of ethnic cleansing in other countries. We see the deployment of the National Guard to militarize the border. That's certainly an escalation. So on those two things, it does seem forcible. On the other hand, when we go through a list of violent cases that the United Nations provides that may typify ethnic cleansing, you get murder, torture, extrajudicial executions, confinement to ghettos, use of civilians as human shields, these things mostly don't crop up. The only ones that the UN provides as examples that do crop up are arbitrary arrest and detention. And there has been a lot of arbitrary arrest, even of U.S. citizens, in the process of trying to do these aggressive deportations. Rape and sexual assault, we have seen accounts pretty well documented of endemic rape and sexual assault within the detention centers. And then, of course, deportation itself is sometimes identified as a marker of ethnic cleansing. But on its own, deportation really can't be called ethnic cleansing. So it's kind of forcible, kind of. But what we can say is that all the structures are there to ramp up forcibleness in the future. The camps are being built. The military is in place. There are paramilitaries in place as well. Enforcement is being ramped up. If the administration wanted to get a lot more violent in the future, it is becoming more possible to do so. And I think that is sort of a, if not a code red, then sort of a code orange, maybe. Then we ask, well, is it a specific ethnic group being targeted? And the answer is no. It's a specific legal class. But if you look at the ethnic groups of the people being deported, it's easy to find accounts of Africans, Europeans, Canadians, of Hispanics, of people of all different backgrounds. It's disproportionately Hispanics because most immigrants are Hispanics right now, particularly most illegal immigrants. But it's not actually targeting a specific ethnic group. They're not saying, well, we're only going to deport Hispanics, and we're going to deport them whether they're legal residents or not. Saying, no, we're going to deport illegal residents regardless of ethnicity. So we can't really call it ethnic cleansing in that sense. And then finally we ask, is it actually likely to remove an ethnic group? And the answer is no. Because the problem is that 80% of Hispanics are citizens. So even if you remove every non-citizen Hispanic, you're not going to eliminate the Hispanic ethno-linguistic group. They're still going to be here. If you deported every non-citizen from the United States, the non-Hispanic white share of the population would only rise from 62% to 65%. The reality is that the ethnic mix among non-citizens in the U.S. is not that different than the ethnic mix of citizens. So what we can say about these policies is that the administrative changes that have been made have escalated the degree of violence, but they have not been specifically and exclusively targeting a certain ethnic group, and they are not likely to have the impact of actually largely removing any specific ethnic group. And as a result, we can't really call them ethnic cleansing. But that's not really saying much. Saying, well, it's not a horrible crime against humanity that would get you hauled up in The Hague for human rights trials. Well, okay, so that's a low bar.
Lyman Stone is our guest. We're talking about U.S. immigration policy and ethnic cleansing when we come back. We'll pick up right there. Not quite ethnic cleansing is a very low bar. Stay tuned. I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Confessions of a Well-Intentioned Preacher. It details how I mistakenly ignored or explained away entire parts of Scripture in order to protect my hearers from legalism. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Lyman Stone writes about the certainty he found in the presence of Christ in his word and sacraments, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Jesus is the Word of God. He's also incarnate, born of the Virgin Mary and made man. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word is all about Jesus for you. A confessional liturgical parish in the Michigan District, we invite you to worship with us in our new location at the corner of Wattles and Livernoy Roads in the Troy Museum and Historic Village, Troy, Michigan. LCIW.org.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org.
What does it mean to be a man? More importantly, what does it mean to be a man of God? In its June issue, The Lutheran Witness aims to help readers dig more deeply into the Bible's vision of men set free. Free to be loving husbands, caring fathers, bold proclaimers of the gospel, and self-sacrificial images of Jesus Christ. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about U.S. immigration policy and ethnic cleansing. Lyman Stone is our guest agricultural economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, advisor at Demographic Intelligence, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Aggressive Deportations Are Bad, But They're Not Ethnic Cleansing. He's also written the Wittenberg Trail feature in the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled From Despair to the Real Presence of God. He talks about being raised as a Christian, but without a real solid hook or object of faith. He could tell you that Jesus died for him, but knowing this for certainty, the assurance of it, was found in nothing around him. This is where he discovers certainty. in the external means of grace, baptism, absolution, the Lord's Supper, and the preaching of God's Word. You can read all about it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's free and it's online. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click the red subscription button, enter your email address, and we will send you the latest Issues Etc. journal. Lyman, before the break, you were talking about how if our U.S. immigration policy at present doesn't qualify as ethnic cleansing, that is still a very low bar. Expand on that.
Well, what we're seeing is that American citizens are being harassed, intimidated, arrested, and in some cases detained for years as part of this process. One man, I linked the article in my article, was detained for 4 years by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And he was a U.S. citizen. The problem is that when you tell Immigration Enforcement to be extremely aggressive about pursuing these cases, they have to start treating huge groups of citizens as suspects. When you start treating all of your citizens as suspects, you start to arrest the wrong people. You start to disrupt the lives of people who have every legal right to be here. And beyond that, when you actually ask, well, what is the goal of this policy? Well, the goal of this policy is to enforce the rule of law. If you don't have the legal right to be here, you shouldn't be here. It's that simple. But the rule of law is not only about who has a right to be here. It's about the process we use to determine how disputes are resolved. And the method that's being used right now is that people basically don't get due process. They often don't get lawyers. We rush them through the system. We, you know, tear two-month-old unsuckled children from their mother's breasts, and we say, well, okay, this is how we're going to do this because what? We want to send a signal? You don't defend the rule of law by ignoring the rule of law. At the end of the day, yes, we should deport illegal immigrants. At the same time, we have to do so in a way that is consistent with American principles and with the due process of law. Otherwise, we're not actually defending what we claim to defend.
You do say what's happening in America now is not normal. What do you mean by that?
I mean that when you're building camps in the desert to house tens of thousands of children, you have to stop and ask yourself, what am I doing? I mean, you ask the Lutheran question, what does this mean? And what it means is you intend to detain tens of thousands of children. That, you know, you might be able to come up with a way where that's technically legal. And I mean, I think there are ways to justify it on some legalistic grounds, but this is wrong. When you start telling yourself that, well, it might be technically legal for Immigration and Customs to wander onto people's property without warrants and cuff American citizens without any charges and intimidate people like this, maybe there's a way you can justify that. But would you really want to? Is that really how we've historically done things in the U.S.? And the answer is no. That actually isn't how we've historically done things. We are better than that. So when I say it's not normal, I mean it's not normal to deploy the National Guard to the border. It's not normal to build tent camps for thousands of children. It's not normal to treat hundreds of thousands of people with no crimes as if they are MS-13 gang members. Now, we should be working hard to deal with, you know, the problem of immigrant crime, of gangs and things like that. But there's a right and a wrong way to do it.
The term, as I've been contemplating this for the last several weeks, maybe having lived under a rock, being unaware that camps were being built, being unaware that children were being detained apart from their parents, the term that has come back into my mind several times is the banality of evil. Do you think it applies mm-hmm. here?
I do. I think that, you know, the goal here was always to end this program of catch and release, where you arrest an immigrant, you serve him some papers, then you put an ankle bracelet on him and he leaves and you never see him again, right? So you end up basically not really enforcing the law. And so they said, well, we're gonna try and do something a little more to enforce the law. And inch by inch, they sort of convinced themselves that one more step down this road was still fine. So, you know, you go, well, maybe we're going to charge more of them. Well, maybe we're going to charge all of them. Well, if we charge all of them, we're going to have to separate their kids. Okay, so maybe we'll make these big camps. And, well, you know, it seems like there's some sexual assault of children in these camps. So, you know, I don't, maybe we need to put more enforcement in there, but we don't really have money for it. So maybe we're just going to tolerate tens of thousands of rapes of children in federal custody. And you start to get to that point where you start to realize what you've accepted, that you have so lowered your standards for your own conscience that all you're defending is the technical process. You're not actually making an argument on the merits. So I think that this idea of the banality of evil is entirely applicable here. That we've put ourselves in a position where in trying to pursue a totally defensible goal, which is enforcing the sovereignty of the nation at the border and ensuring that people who don't have a legal right to be here do not stay here, that's a legitimate goal. But in trying to enforce it, we've forgotten that the reason to enforce this is because there's a higher good related to the rule of law. And if you ignore the rule of law to enforce it, you didn't improve the country at all.
Is part of the problem here that we have come to view the immigration debacle that we have in the United States, porous borders, it is a potential, an actual national security threat, but we've come to treat it as an emergency. And there are steps that a state or a government might take in an emergency that they would never contemplate taking in a non-emergency.
Yes, exactly. As soon as people start telling you that there's an emergency, that there's a crisis, that if we don't fix this right now using drastic measures, everything you love in the world will be threatened or destroyed, that's generally your cue that the person you're talking to is they're too afraid to be in a position of power. Scared people shouldn't govern. Now, the important thing to remember is that we're not seeing a big wave of illegal immigrants right now. Illegal immigration has been about stable for the last 10 years, and it's been stable at very low levels, levels that were lower than at any point in the 90s or the 2000s. So it's not like there's some big wave cresting right now that we have no idea how to deal with. We're seeing low to normal levels of attempts to cross the border. We have more border enforcement than we have almost more border enforcement than we've ever had before. So, I mean, what's the crisis? We've got plenty of people on the job. There's not a huge wave coming. The people who are coming are disproportionately children. You know, I don't wake up in the night terrified that a five-year-old is going to attack me or something. We treat this like some crisis situation, when at the end of the day, the crisis is that we have so much mismanagement and inconsistency in our policy. The crisis is not that there's some flood of terrible immigrants. The amount of immigrants coming over is not unusual right now. And if anything, net migration over the Southwest border over the last few years has been break even or possibly negative. That is, we may have seen more people leaving the U.S. than coming to it. People don't talk about this a lot, but the reality is there are fewer and fewer Latin Americans who want to come to the U.S. A lot of them have come here. Fertility's falling. Their generational cohort size is shrinking. This problem is solving itself in the long run. We don't need to act like it's a disaster that requires us to deploy military forces in civilian areas.
As a Christian, I have often, well, probably for the last 20 years, looked at it this way. While I want to understand and while I support a reasonable immigration policy, and what I see happening nowadays is not reasonable by any stretch of the imagination, I also want to see some empathy, especially from our lawmakers on this issue. And that is to say, if I put myself in the position of a father living in Mexico with children, I'd be trying to get into the U.S. too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live in Mexico. I don't want my kids to be raised in Mexico or any of the other countries where sometimes the states are more criminal than civil. Now, I am not saying that that is an excuse, but to put ourselves in the illegal immigrants' shoes for a moment and understand that what brings most of them here is not a desire to commit crimes, although people will argue coming here illegally is a crime, not a desire to commit crimes, but a desire that drives every immigrant to leave where they were raised and come to a different place.
And you know, sometimes people will want to use the Bible to tell you what immigration policy should be. they'll say, well, the Bible says be kind to strangers, so we should let in 200,000 refugees. Or they'll say, well, no, but the Bible says that God has instituted authorities, therefore we don't have to let in anyone. And Paul has this sermon in Acts where he talks about that God has created the nations, that people should be saved in their own place. And people will use this sometimes to say, well, that means no immigration. But the problem is that the biblical authors were not writing for the purpose of informing us the optimal number of Central American refugees to admit. We have to use wisdom and discernment on this. Yes, nations have every right to police their borders. They should do so. It is one of their fundamental duties to their citizens. And when people violate those laws, you know, there are penalties for violating the law. At the same time, part of the discernment that nations have to use when they make their decisions is, what would our citizens want for themselves? If there's a crisis in our nation, and someday there will be, history is long, eventually there will be a crisis in our nation, who will take us in? Will there be anyone who wants to? And the answer is, well, there will be, if we've treated other people in crisis with fairness. That doesn't mean letting everyone in. That doesn't mean open borders. It means having a fair process that is transparent, that gives people their legal rights and their human rights. And we may reject some. That'll happen. But at the same time, we have to have a fair and open process that gives people their rights under the law. And right now, that's not what we're doing. We're not even living up to our own standards.
Lyman Stone is our guest. We're talking about U.S. immigration policy and ethnic cleansing on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 20th. When we come back, it's being reported that the president has signed an executive order addressing the issue of separating children at the border from their parents. We'll talk about that. With so many religions in the world today, how can we know which, if any, is true? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims. It's written by regular guest Craig Parton. Learn more about Religion on Trial at IssuesETC.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial by Craig Parton.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS National Housing Corporation is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During June, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to LCMS National Housing Corporation. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century.
Lord,
the 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about U.S. immigration policy and ethnic cleansing. Lyman Stone is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. This week marks 9 months since Hurricane Maria slammed into Puerto Rico. And LCMS Disaster Response Team is hard at work holistically and spiritually, caring for people by rebuilding homes, giving thousands of meals, Bible studies, offering spiritual care, and building up Puerto Ricans whose lives have been impacted by that hurricane. You can find out more about LCMS Disaster Response's work in Puerto Rico at lcms.org/disaster, helping the hurting amid disaster. LCMS Disaster Response, lcms.org/disaster. Lyman, as we speak, it is reported that the president has signed an executive order titled Affording Congress an Opportunity to Address Family Separation. What are your thoughts on a possible presidential executive order stopping the separation of children from their parents at the U.S. border?
You know, it depends on the exact contents of the order. The reason that families are being separated, well, there's debate about exactly why, but functionally, the legal structure here is that when you detain someone, if you do not charge them with something above a misdemeanor, you can't hold them for more than 20 days. So if you want to hold them for more than 20 days, that is, if you don't want to just release them back and then lose track of them, you must charge them with a crime. But if you charge them with a crime, you must separate their children from them. We don't send kids to prison with their parents. So I'm unsure what exactly the president will be able to do under the current legal structures to fix this without either changing the charging of people with a crime for crossing the border, in which case he's backing off on his tough border rhetoric, or doing some, you know, facelift on the policy that doesn't really change it. And at the root of the issue here, I don't think this should be fixed by an executive order. That's half the problem, is that every time we have a new president, they issue new executive orders and they flip the policy on its head. So our next president, he'll change it again. The one after, he'll change it again. The rule of law requires a degree of stability. You have to have written laws that people can count on and plan on. So my concern with that would be that the president is going to act, and he's going to put some Band-Aid on it, and then Congress won't act. And we're going to maintain this instability. We're going to continue having a situation where families of immigrants and U.S. citizens have no idea what the laws are going to be. They have no idea what their rights are, what they're entitled to. So what we need is for Congress to act. We need our senators and our House members to actually have a spine for once in their life, probably the first time in their life for most of them, and write a real law that has actual teeth determining who can stay, who can go. What are the criteria? Strip the executive of this excessive flexibility that's used to give millions of people amnesty for one president and then deport millions for the next president. Have clear laws that actually set real standards and that removes this absurd flexibility that the executive branch has on this topic.
Lyman, finally, why has Congress appeared to be unable to pass that kind of law? How can they break this gridlock? Everyone says it ought to change.
There are a lot of proposals in Congress right now. I'm not going to go through, you know, exact specifics of a legal solution. I think, you know, you have to basically come up with a set of standards that you agree on under what conditions do we charge someone with a crime for crossing the border? Under what conditions do we leave it at a misdemeanor? What are the rules for who we release under different terms of supervision? You need specific rules about who gets what kind of treatment. Now, the reason why they haven't done this is really simple, because it's a hot button issue that Americans are outraged over, and every politician is scared that whatever position he takes he takes is if they're a Democrat and they accept that, yeah, we probably should charge some of these people with a crime and separate them. And, you know, we probably do need some real enforcement here. If they're a Democrat, they take that position. No matter what other concessions they get on, you know, crisis migrants and asylum and stuff like that, they're going to be primaried. Someone's going to run against them in the primary. They are going to be treated like they're a Nazi. Whereas on the right, if you're a conservative and you say, look, I'm going to make sure we get real border enforcement here, we get real legal changes, but also we're going to write in a lot of humanitarian protections for children, for families, for asylum seekers, this sort of thing, you're treated like you're a communist, like you're somehow destroying the nation because you thought that maybe we shouldn't leave children in tent camps in the desert. And you face a primary challenge. You know, you're raked through the mud of the conservative presses. So we have a dysfunctional media ecosystem, and a dysfunctional political ecosystem. I want to be clear, when I say media ecosystem here, I don't just mean mainstream media. I mean our partisan presses. I mean our conservative news outlets. I mean a lot of the progressive news outlets. It's not just the mainstream media's problem anymore. Conservative media is big now. It gets a lot of readership. It's time for conservative media to stand up and have a little responsibility as well and actually start to tell people some hard truths that, yeah, you want border enforcement? Well, you might have to trade something for it. You might have to compromise. It might be time to start telling people that.
Lyman Stone is an agricultural economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, advisor to demographic intelligence, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Aggressive Deportations Are Bad, But They're Not Ethnic Cleansing. Read it for yourself at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Lyman, it's always a pleasure, and thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Cetera, it's our weekly media coverage of religion feature with syndicated columnist Terry Mattingly. And on Friday, we'll have Pastor Ted Geese review the movie Incredibles 2. Our listeners had expressed last week some concerns about what might be in the movie. We'll see if those concerns are borne out or if there's nothing to worry about with Pastor Ted Geese Friday on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. has been brought to you in part today by Concordia University, Wisconsin. They offer 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, and they'll waive their application fee for Issues Etc. listeners. Just click the Concordia University, Wisconsin logo at issuesetc.org and enter the promo code ISSUES. Lifelong Lutheran learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin online. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? On our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues, Etc., What Does This Mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen.